Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 384 of Longbox Heroes. Joe and Todd joining you here once again, talking all the latest and greatest information in the world of comic books. Todd, how you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic.
Todd is also a liar, as it, being part of the co-host of the show as well.
I never lie.
Right.
I just fabricate truths. Mm-hmm.
You don't stretch the truth, Todd. You massage the truth.
That's right. You want it to go as far as it can without breaking.
I was going to say, you make the truth feel as good as you possibly can, so it'll essentially say anything you want it to say.
Well, I wouldn't know about that.
Right. But we are on the brink here in the Northeast of a pending death storm.
Oh, that Firestorm character?
No, I wish. That I can handle a little bit easier. I don't have to shovel him.
Shoveling Deathstorm.
Right. But no, as it stands, I still have super secret science job, but both my wife and my kid have no work and no school, so...
And with me, the Cinnabons don't undercook themselves, you know?
You know, I noticed at the Cinnabon, when they put the icing on, they're not even cooked enough, the Cinnabons themselves, mm-hmm. to melt the icing, which is the saddest thing in the world.
That was my idea to save money.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because you don't want that. You don't want to use too much heat. You got to pay for that, so...
And Lord knows, Todd, you have enough heat the way it is.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Oh, my goodness. So, let's get into the news, what we're going to be talking about on the show here today. We've got what Brian Michael Bendis' plan at DC is going to be. We're kind of right, but mostly wrong.
Right.
We've got an interesting... story involving the original Planet of the Apes script that deals and interests me directly. Ways that you can get even more of a discount if you are a digital comic type person. And DC further attempting to, get this, Todd, make more comic fans? Because fans like you aren't going to be around, you and I aren't going to be around forever.
And by forever, we mean 6 months from now.
Listen, you shoot high, I shoot low. We also got convention stuff going on this weekend, digital sales and freebies, what we read from this past week, which was Dark Knight's Metal number 5 and The Flash Annual number 1, what we're most looking forward to coming out this week, Todd's Art Attack, which I got you covered on.
I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, listen. Mailbag question, we'll dip in. It's a light one, but an interesting one. And TV talk with the most recent episode of The Flash. And of course, for us, the most recent is last week's episode, because we're always a week behind with our dumb recording schedule.
Yes.
So, let's get into the news. The speculation, of course, with the big news story from this past November was Brian Michael Bendis leaving Marvel, coming to DC. What was he going to do? When was it going to come out? How big of a deal was it going to be? We, over the last several weeks, have speculated it was going to be something Superman-related. I think that was the easy guess. But exactly what Superman-related was it going to be? And when Superman it was going to be, of course. So just this past week, DC put it out there with a big interview with Bendis. Of course, we knew that he was going to be doing a story in the big Action Comics number 1, but also starting in the end of May, he is going to be doing a 6-issue weekly series called Man of Steel, with a different artist on every issue: Ivan Hayes, Doc Shaner, Ryan Sook, Adam Hughes, Jason Fabok, and Kevin Maguire. Are going to be doing each of those issues, and then that is going to spin into Bendis taking over both Action Comics and Superman.
Do you think he can handle 2 books?
There was times at Marvel, even most recently, where he was writing 4 to 5 books a month.
Yep.
Being that this is going to be 2 books that he has minimally, from the day of the press release to the day the first issue of the... miniseries comes out, he's got a 4-month lead time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to be okay.
Yep. And I like the fact that it's kicking off with the 6-issue miniseries called Man of Steel. I'm trying to remember if any big-time creators did a miniseries called Man of Steel to kick off Superman back in the day. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, John Byrne. I remember now.
Yes.
And that was pretty good, so now, hopefully this will be too.
During that time frame, end of May, June, and into July, that is going to be the only Superman books published. No action, no Superman. And then in July, when he takes over those books, Superman is going to be renumbered with a new number one. Action Comics is going to pick up at issue 1001. And mm-hmm. it's essentially going to be, you know, as things always are, it's like, oh, one book is going to be this side, and this book is going to be that side.
Right.
Action is going to be the Clark Kent book, essentially, and the Superman book is going to be the Superman book.
That's cool. I'm going to get them both. I'm actually really pumped for Brian Michael Bendis on Superman in Action. The only thing is that's got me upset is that Action is going to be delayed for 3 months, so they can do that's the only book that's going to be published is that one. And that's going to push back me seeing Action Comics 2000 by 3 months.
Oh.
You know?
Now, the other thing that he mentions, of course, is while there's going to be big changes coming out of the Man of Steel miniseries leading into the two new books, that it's not going to be a reboot of what has been going on during all the Rebirth stuff. Bendis says that the current runs by Dan Jurgens, Peter Tomasi, Pat Gleason, etc., he's not going to throw out or abandon any of those sort of things. He's just going to take it to, quote, surprising new areas.
Which I think is smart because it's working. Like, you know, after the stink that was on Superman from New 52, you got good press. Like, you don't reboot it again after only so many issues. You know what I mean? So I'm happy with that. And like I said, I'm really looking forward to him on the book.
Right, and the other thing that he's also going to be doing, we talked about he's doing the piece in Action Comics 1000. In May, first week of May, DC is putting out a quarter issue, DC Nation number 0, which is going to have a, you know, kind of the primer for what's going to be going on with a lot of the stuff for the summer, and the Bendis story in there is going to have art done by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
He's a good artist. I don't know if you know that.
He's a pretty okay artist.
Right, and the thing I like about that is, do you remember back when they did I'm trying to remember if it was DC Nation 0 or what it was called at the time, that kicked off Blackest Night and all that other stuff,
mm-hmm.
where they had like 7 different stories. Marvel and DC does them occasionally, but I'm looking forward to see that, and maybe we'll see like what other things they have planned in the DC universe for the future.
And of course, the other thing that we knew was going to be no surprise was that all of his creator-owned stuff, specifically Powers, Jinx, Scarlet, and everything else in between, Takio, anything that he did independently at Image that he brought over to Marvel under the Icon/Jinx World imprint is coming over to DC as its own separate imprint as well. Now, when that stuff is going to get published, anything like that is up to who knows. Mm-hmm. But he did say that it's going to be less of a Vertigo imprint and more of what the Young Animal imprint is.
Well, I hope it gets, you know, published quickly in the, you know, the way like Scarlet was back in the day. Oh, wait.
I was going to say, or published on time like the Gerard Way Banner books are. Oh, wait.
Oh, the Doom Patrol are fantastic when it comes out.
But anyway, it looks as though DC has a plan. Obviously, if you're going to spend the money to bring arguably the biggest creator in the last 20 years in comics to you, give him who is arguably your flagship character. Let him run that universe. And, you know, I have faith. This is, you know, new ground for Bendis to toy with. And I'm going in with high hopes.
I am, too. And I know Superman is their flagship character because he was their first one. But do you think he's the flagship character now in the way, or do you think it's Batman? Do you know what I'm trying to say? I mean, flagship, do you know, with that definition. But their biggest character, wouldn't you say, is Batman?
Okay.
He's got about 1 billion titles.
in one aspect of a person like you or I would say, yes, Batman's the flagship, you know, he is mm-hmm. the detective of Detective Comics.
Mm-hmm.
But to the layperson, and when I say the layperson, you know, we've always talked about this before, you know, they've gone to nations where they have no running water, they have no electricity, they have no TV, and people there are able to pick out Mickey Mouse. They're able to pick out, like, these cultural icons.
Right. I've always heard, like, the three things you could take anywhere in the world and show it to, like, you know, like somebody living in the back wilderness is the Superman symbol, Mickey Mouse, and the crucifix. Those were, like, your three things.
And that is why I say Superman, at the end of the day, is that flagship character for DC.
And I agree, but I think probably the bat symbol's up there now. I really do. Because, like, in that world of, you know, like, everybody knows Superman, Man of Steel makes, you know, $600 million. Batman movies were making billions of dollars.
Right. But, again, I still think as a global phenomenon,
mm-hmm.
Batman's had peaks and Batman's had valleys in recognition. Whereas I think Superman, whether his popularity overall has gone up or down, and it might be in a down position right now, I think just that S symbol, people know that's Superman, whereas you show them the bat symbol, they might, you're going to get 9 out of 10 people say Batman, that one person out of 10 might say, bat? It's a bat?
And not Dracula?
Right, Dracula, I don't know, Nosferatu, you know. But you show them that, the red and the yellow and the S, 10 out of 10 times, Superman.
They'll say hope. It stands for hope,
Joe. Oh, my
goodness.
I thought in your language, Jehovah started with an I.
Oh.
J?
The penitent man will right. pass.
All right. Moving along in the news. Big news story to me. I don't know about the rest of you, but I wanted to mention it because I've known about these couple news stories. Depending on what circles you run in, you might have known a little bit ahead of time. This is one that I knew was coming only because I'm a big fan of the comedian Dana Gould. He is a big fan of Twilight Zone, Planet of the Apes, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. He did the foreword in the Green Lantern Planet of the Apes comic book that came out from Boom a couple years ago.
Right.
And in there, he mentioned that this project was coming, but he never really said what the project essentially was. But in celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Planet of the Apes movie, which is this year, Boom, with Dana Gould at the helm, is taking the original script, which was written by Rod Serling, which obviously was changed and changed and changed before the movie came out, and turning that into a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I like Dana Gould. I like Planet of the Apes. It's not like my favorite franchise in the whole wide world. But if Dana Gould's writing it, I'm definitely going to check it out.
I am too, because I remember hearing about, like, what the movie was going to be before. Because, like, you know, watching the documentaries and stuff like that or whatever was on the extras on DVDs or reading about it. So, like, I, you know, it was stuff that they probably couldn't have pulled off in 1968. And other stuff. So I'm really looking forward to see it. I'm definitely going to read it. And, I don't know. And I'm a big fan of Rod Serling. I mean, like, back in the day, like, The Twilight Zone is some of the best TV, you know, I've ever watched. And, nowadays it's, the second coming of Rod Serling is the guy who writes Black Mirror. Can't recommend that enough if you like Twilight Zone stuff. So I'm all in on this stuff.
Right. So definitely, that's not coming out until August, but again, it was in the news, so of course we mentioned it here. Another thing in the news is digital comics. Todd and I think, the ship has passed for us to be completely digital people
mm-hmm.
when it comes to our comic books, but I do know a lot of people that are digital folks, and I do know a lot of people who do the Marvel Unlimited, which right. is essentially you pay your flat fee. I know they're having a sale on it right now, whatever the sale is. But I think it's like $10 a month, and you get essentially the entire Marvel back catalog 6 months. You know, you don't get the new releases for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've talked about their service many a times here on the show, in that sometimes stuff is missing, sometimes stuff is not cataloged correctly. That's a job I would love to have, but I think they've gotten most of the kinks, and it's like 90% intact as opposed to like 75 or it was like 3 years ago. But anyway, Comixology also offers something similar where it's essentially non-Marvel, non-DC, but it's a lot of the other big publishers, Image, Dark Horse, IDW, Boom, Dynamite, and so on and so forth. No DC, unfortunately, and it's $6 a month, and you get that same unlimited thing, where it's the delay of the 6 months or whatever it is. Now, they've added on top of that, okay, so you get your subscription to that backlog, but with your subscription, you also get 15% off anything else.
Yeah.
So if you want to buy that DC stuff, and when the DC stuff goes on sale, which it rarely does, like the new stuff, you get 15% off those sale prices. So I got to hand it to Comixology for attempting to compete with Marvel, because most people are just like, Marvel, I'll get Marvel. Obviously, you're not getting DC in this, which, again, shines a giant light on why does DC not have something?
Who knows? Maybe something's coming with all their projects coming up. You know, they're going to have their own streaming TV stuff. Like, I can't imagine this isn't far behind now.
Imagine, Todd, if part of whatever that Warner Digital streaming service was, they threw in the comic book stuff as well.
That would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, you can watch Titans and also read the Titans that spawn the TV show.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Spawn boy. Isn't at DC, though.
No, not yet.
Well, everybody's buying companies, allegedly.
Allegedly. So yeah, that's, if you're a Comixology person, you were thinking about that Comixology deal, you're a Marvel person, you know, essentially, if you don't mind being 6 months behind, you could pretty much get everything but DC for, you know, what is it, $16 a month, $15 a month, whenever they have the sales going on for Marvel, which I think with the Black Panther coming out, they're having a sale right now. But lastly in the news, of course, DC has announced two new imprints, and this has kind of been spawned on by the success of the DC Superhero Girls stuff, which is obviously Todd and I are neither girls nor teenage girls or preteen girls, but I do understand that the comics are very good of the DC Superhero Girls, and you know, it's multimedia. They've got a cartoon, they've got dolls. They've got everything for it, and it's been a huge success, so much so that DC Superhero Girls is the DC free comic book day book.
Right.
So based on that, they're adding in two new imprints, one called DC Inc. and one called DC Zoom, where they're focusing more on the middle school, preteen, and the young adult, teenager up to 18 markets, obviously grade school people, high school people, stuff like that. They're hitting a lot of the female characters. A lot of the early stuff is Harley Quinn, Mara, more superhero girl stuff. And they've got their schedule like lined up till the end of the year with these books, whether it be Ink stuff, which again, Ink is more of the teenager, and then the Zoom, which is the preteen stuff. And they're hitting everything. You know, Batman, Teen Titans, Catwoman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Super Sons. And it's a lot outside of show favorites, at least for me, Baltazar and Franco. It's a lot of young adult writers. As the writers, like who do like young adult novels, and it's more manga artists who are doing the art on these books.
And I was looking over the list of writers, and it seems like there's a ton of female writers doing these imprints.
Yes, it looks like all of the Ink books are written by women, and of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, eight of the Zoom books, half are written by women. So, again, you know, DC doing good stuff, trying new stuff, giving new creators a chance to try stuff out. You really can't begrudge them for that.
And the thing that I like about it, Joe, is that it's not like, hey, we're going to do this with our main line and change everything and try new things all at once. You're doing an imprint, which makes, like, whatever you want to do is fine. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, they're not just, like, revamping everything at DC. Like, hey, remember, like, Superman, we're going to aim Superman at this genre or whatever. But now, age or whatever is what I meant to say. I like the fact that it's its own imprint. And more readers is good. Young readers, it's what this industry needs. So I'm all for this. I just honestly thought one of the imprints was just going to be all Eobard stories, but it's not.
And again, there's no way that anyone, a long-term or short-term comic book reader, could be upset by this. Mm-hmm. If these books do not speak to you, you will never see these books.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to give your child some sort of continuity-heavy Batman book or Superman book or whatever it is, these are the books that you can give to your kids and not have to worry about anything.
Right.
That's all. I can't recommend this as a great idea enough.
Right. I just want to see how long they'll stick with the imprints, because I found it funny. I was reading an article online yesterday or today when this news came out, and it was like all the defunct, you know, DC imprints over the years. And it was like, yeah, I forgot about Paradox Press and, you know, like all the other ones. Like, what was the one that Helix?
Right.
So hopefully this will be around for a while.
All of those just all end up getting folded into Vertigo, essentially.
Right. I doubt that Zoom and Ink will get folded into Vertigo.
Right. I just ask whether Johnny DC, is that still a thing?
Johnny DC is still, I think they have to do a trademark for him every once in a while. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know he was a villain in one of those wacky parody books, like Sergio Argonis Kills the DC Universe.
Right.
I think it was Johnny DC who ended up being mad at everybody. So.
No, I think some of the other all-ages books, like your Scooby-Doo team-ups and the Teen mm-hmm. Titans Go books, are technically Johnny DC books.
There you go. So maybe they'll merge.
Right.
Ink Zoom Johnny DC.
So, moving along here, convention news this weekend. There's a bunch of conventions all over. I don't know what's going to happen with the convention in New Jersey if the weather forecast is what it's going to be, but the aptly named WinterCon in Plainfield, New Jersey, has folks like Ron Mars, Scott Hanna, and Jim Calafiore there.
Right.
The East Bay Comic Con in Concord, California, has folks like Brent Anderson and Mark Texiera there. And in Vancouver, Washington, we're still a few weeks away from convention season really kicking off, because Emerald City is usually like the kickoff of it.
Right.
But this I Like Comic Con, it's got some heavy hitters, man. It's got Neil Adams, it's got James Asmus. It's got Gail Simone, Dan Brereton, Steve Lieber, Jim Steranko, just to name a few, but it's like all creators, no media guests, no cosplay folks, no nothing like that. If you like comics, then you like I Like Comic-Con.
And if anybody goes to I Like Comic-Con, I highly recommend hitting up the Steranko booth.
Mm-hmm.
Always enjoyable to talk to that man.
Right. I...
What?
Nothing. I was gonna make a remark that if you did, make sure that you're wearing a wire.
That's true. He is Mr. Miracle.
I thought he was more Funky Flashman.
No, that's somebody else. That's Mr. Lee.
Right. But all the information for all these shows, actually, this is a note from me, and this will tie into the plug for the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com. soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, where anytime this show, Longbox Heroes After Dark or any of the shows in the soon-to-be-named network go up, they're going to be over here. And that includes such shows as Profane Arguments, Puzzle Warriors 3, AIM Downsides Podcast, Podvocacy, Fresher and Parlance. And I mentioned Fresher and Parlance because Fresher and Parlance live out on the West Coast. They live in the greater Washington area. Now, unfortunately, Fresher is a bit of a jet setter worldwide, et cetera. But I need to stooge him off to the I Like Comic Con in Vancouver to see how close that is to him, because I think that might be something up his alley.
Right.
But I mentioned Podvocacy. Of course, we do have some new shows added to the network. The Brothers Prob podcast, which is a show about Hero Clicks. We have a show about Marvel Puzzle Quest, which is going to have some big news on it this week with tying into the upcoming Black Panther movie. But Brothers Prob is Hero Clicks, and I listen, and it makes me long back to the days when I used to play Hero Clicks. But there's going to be a new podcast added to the soon-to-be-named network in about 2 weeks' time, and that is going to be the Everlasting Minute podcast, Todd. I'm not sure, Todd, I know you being a big podcast aficionado.
Right.
There is a, I don't want to say like a series because they're not connected, but it's folks who do a podcast where they watch a minute of a movie and they podcast about what was in that minute, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's currently about 80-some podcasts that do that. Everything from Back to the Future to Goodfellas to Indiana Jones to everything in between. Well, our good friends Jason and David over at Podvocacy are going to be doing that for the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory film from 1972 starring Gene Wilder.
If it was the Johnny Depp one, I would have listened.
No, but I wish them well in their new endeavor, and I certainly will be listening to that. It looks like it's going to be, it's changing up their schedule a bit. They kind of explained it on Podvocacy this past week, but it mm-hmm. looks like it's going to be thrice weekly.
You used thrice properly. I'm very proud.
Of course I did. What, I just fell off the turnip truck yesterday? I know how to say things.
You know how to say things and thrice.
Right. I'm not dumb like everyone says. I'm smart and I demand respect.
And you get it in droves.
Right. So, all of these shows, whenever they come out, are going to be linked over at soontobenamednetwork.com, soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com. Again, show notes, also in the show notes, digital sales and freebies. Freebies haven't changed in quite some time, but anytime, I'm keeping my eyes peeled, anytime something new comes up, I will add it to the existing list. But the sales going on currently is Oni Press is having a sale on the run of Scott Pilgrim comic books, including the most recent ones that have come out. Dynamite is having a sale on their Heroines comic, female superheroes, action adventure, etc. The jewel in that one is that you can get Gail Simone's entire Red Sonja run, which is a fantastic set of comic books. I think it was 18 books and maybe like a special or an annual or something like that for right. $12.
That's a good deal. Great comic.
That's a fantastic deal. And Marvel is having a sale on their New Mutants books. Now, New Mutants casts a wide net, Todd. If you remember, New Mutants eventually came X-Force.
Right.
And I giveth a gold star to the people who put this sale together. At the same time, I taketh one away.
Oh, boy.
So, they included in this sale, of course, New Mutants stuff, X-Force stuff. Great. All the different iterations of New Mutants and X-Force, if they have come out, great. You know, obviously not stuff where it's named like Uncanny X-Force, that's not included, or Cable in the X-Force, that's not included. But during the course of that early New Mutants run, it crosses over with Uncanny X-Men. Those issues are included in this sale, so you can get the full story. Great. During the Rob Liefeld written and drawn X-Force run, they did a crossover with McFarlane's Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Not included in the sale.
Well, thus, he's not a mutant, so he's not allowed to come over and play.
But it's an important part of the crossover. They did two. Remember when they did the sideways issues, Todd?
I do remember the sideways
issues.
That's
what these were. It's the two sideways issues. So now I have one sideways issue without the resolution of what happens to the book.
I guess you could say this sale went sideways.
Oh, not to be confused with the Paul Giamatti film of the same name.
I remember that movie. Right. That was a great movie.
That was an okay movie.
It was about wineries, wasn't it?
Right. That was at the beginning where my tastes were kind of going away from the culturally poignant type movies. You know, the sensible adult type movies, a little bit of humor in them and whatever. Going more toward, I just need dumb stuff. I need, why am I using my brain so much when I'm watching this TV?
Oh, I want to see The Matrix. That was what Joe was saying.
Right. This was many years after The Matrix. But no, I don't want to see The Matrix. Nobody wants to see that movie. So, moving into what we read from this past week, let's kick things off, if we could, with Dark Knights Metal number 5, the penultimate issue of the big DC crossover that's been going on. And I say less of a crossover, more of an event. Written by Scott Snyder, with art by Greg Capullo, with a little bit of help here and there. Now, of course, Todd likes to give me grief, as I do have to admit that this book has been slightly late, not hugely late.
gentle ribbing.
Right, a gentle ribbing. So, there's a lot going on in the series, of course. You know, you've got Barbados, the evil Batman of the Dark Universe, who's kidnapped our Batman. Clark Kent went to go save him, while the rest of the broken-off pieces of the Justice League are out to stop the Hawk people, who are possessed by Barbados, as well as the other people that he has pulled from the other dimensions, which are all the little one-shots and everything. But this is kind of like the big battle before the finale.
Right.
And while I am a Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo fan, I did enjoy their work on Batman during the New 52. It was one of the, you know, one of the few bright spots of the New 52, being that they were allowed to kind of keep a lot of the stuff that had happened before, where everyone else was forced to kind of start fresh. I'm not going to say that I don't like this, mm-hmm. but I think that we might have said on the show before that this miniseries, this event, essentially seemed to be made, pitched something to make a whole bunch of cool Batman-related action figures.
Yes, to be all the, what if Batman stole the Justice League powers?
But was
evil. That's what?
But was evil. You know, yes. It's like, oh, we've seen like a Batman Flash and a Batman this and a Batman that, but not the evil versions of them.
Evil, yes, no. So that's what it is. I don't know. Like my take on this is, I have one more issue. I'm in this deep. I want to see how it ends, but I haven't really enjoyed this mini or cross or whatever you want to call it. So that's all I got to say is I got one more issue and I'm out.
Now literally you're out because they're not going to put out another issue.
Right. That's why I said unless he adds an extra issue with a better ending.
But someone needs to put a glossary together of all of our dumb callbacks.
Our jokes that we just beat into the ground.
Right, because I really do try, when I do stuff on the show, if it's a throwaway to regular pop culture, right? Mm-hmm. We make a reference to something in The Simpsons. We make a reference to something in Indiana Jones The Last Crusade. I assume the majority of our listenership, even if this is your first time listening to this show, that you mm-hmm. may have seen one or two or both of those things, right?
Right.
But when Todd makes the joke of adding on an extra issue with a better ending, maybe everyone who's listening to this episode didn't listen to the episode from 2 years ago where we talked about Brian Michael Bendis putting up on his Tumblr that he decided to add an extra issue to Civil War II because he thought of a better ending, so the book's going to be late. Sorry, folks.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're just for me, so what can I do?
Listen, I'm with you. I'm the biggest proponent of saying stuff into an open microphone that one other person is going to get 100 out of 100 times. That person will never hear it.
Right.
But in my mind, I did it, you know?
And sometimes I just do it to make you, so you crackle and pop.
Right. Right, and that's the other thing. If I could say something to get you to go off our heavily altered script. You are reading from the blue version of the script, right?
Right,
not
I
the
am.
The goldenrod version.
Wow.
See?
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it just, you know, I got sidetracked a little bit. But what I'm saying is this event has been a little underwhelming, mostly because so much of the New Age of Heroes stuff, one, has been delayed, and two, what we've seen of it so far, you know, everything on the cover says spinning out of the events of Dark Knight Metal.
Mm-hmm.
So far, it doesn't seem that way. You know, Damage doesn't seem that way. What's the other new one that's out that's,
Silencer?
Silencer, right. I haven't seen Silencer pop up here anywhere yet.
Right, but see, my thing is, I do think, and I said this last time, is I think Damage does spin out of the dark multiverse, because that Suicide Squad that he fought wasn't our Suicide Squad, and like I think all these characters are from one of the dark universes or two of the dark universes, and we're gonna find that out later. You know what I mean? So we'll see.
Right, but again, finding that out later. It's not really spinning out of the direct title that you're referencing.
Yeah, well, that's the way crossovers work most of the time.
I guess.
I mean, my favorite, to this day, my favorite crossover thing is, I forget which one it was, whether it was Infinity Crusade or Infinity War, where Silver Sable goes to Latveria to talk to, or the embassy to talk to Dr. Doom, and is like, knock, knock, knock. Somebody opens up the door. He's like, is Dr. Doom here? No, he's off fighting the Infinity Crusade. End of crossover.
But they were able to put on the cover.
Exactly.
Right.
Infinity War, Infinity Crusade, tie in.
My personal favorite of stuff like that is when the Joe Kelly Deadpool run was going on, 99 into like 90, 97, 98, 99, like that era.
Mm-hmm.
One of the months, they're like, all right, Marvel's going to get behind it. And they did all these different books to hype up the big end of the story arc that he'd been building up for the last 2 years. They do an annual, they do an extra one shot, they do the zero issue that came with, or the half issue that came with Wizard that month, but they did an annual where it was a Deadpool team up with Whittle Wade, where it was a little person clone of Wade Wilson, and it's a book that was published in 1998 or 1999 that on the front it says, tie into Secret Wars 2.
Fantastic.
And lo and behold, it ties into Secret Wars 2 because the Beyonder shows up for one panel.
Right. It's like the way Geoff Johns tied Booster Gold into the 1 million series, as we mentioned last week.
Right. But that was...
So. Hey,
the Booster Gold one was different only because Booster Gold invented wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff. So
yes.
When they do the zero issue and the half issue and the 1 million issue, like he touches into all of the past DC like numbering gimmicks.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
It all works.
Right. Dark Metal, though, Dark Knight's Metal, not working so much, but again, we'll see if issue 6 ties it all together.
And I want to see if Morpheus comes back. That's what, you know, not the Matrix Morpheus, the
Daniel Morpheus.
Daniel Morpheus.
Right, because he shows up at the end of issue 1, he shows up a little bit in the issue 2, and then he's like, I gotta go, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho. The other book that we read from this past week was Flash Annual Number 1, written by Joshua Williamson, with art by Christian Duce Fernandez. And this essentially is a Wally West story, and not the current main continuity Kid Flash Wally West, but the Wally West who is time displaced prior to New 52?
Yes.
And then came back during Rebirth. Essentially, he has been with the Titans, and this is the first time in a while that he's shown up in the main Flash book.
Right, because he was in the Titans as a character, but we haven't seen him in the, like you said, the main Flash book. And while this is going on, there's also a story, another story in the future with that Iris has killed Eobard, the Reverse Flash, and there's repercussions from that. So we have two stories going on, and this is going to be the beginning of the Flash Wars or something like that, I believe. But yes. Either way. So it was good, I can't wait to get your take on it, is as a Wally West fan, I mean, I'm a huge Flash fan. I like Barry, but Wally was pretty much the best Flash to me. Him being back, and Joshua Williams does a good job of, you know, writing Wally again. And I just like, it was good to see Wally back. It done my heart good. And I like even some of the nods to the old book that they did, where he goes to see his ex-girlfriend because he needs, you know, an attachment to the old world because nobody knows he's back. And she makes the house out of metal. And it's like the mansion from when he had won the lottery, and all these like little Flash tie-ins. Like, and he even mentions, he's like, I have to get back to my life, but I never really had a job, and he still doesn't. Like, that's the one thing I loved about Wally West, is like, over the years, other than being an IRS agent for that like 6-issue run, he's never really had a job. But I really like him trying to find his way in the DC Rebirth world, and of the Iris West in the future. I like that they brought back the future cops, which are the hot cops from the future in the Flash world, the Renegades, which are the good version of the Rogues. So I actually really love this issue of Flash Annual 1.
If it means more Wally in the main book, then I'm all for it. And I really did like the Wally stuff. And again, of course, you know, we were told that this is the prelude to the big story arc that they're doing, the Flash War, of course, with the future stuff. But to me, the core of this was that Wally story with Magenta.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it was playing off so much of that older stuff from Wally's run, from, you know, 15, you know, 10 years ago, whenever that was, and the troubled character. Now, I didn't read the solicitation of what this was up about. It was like, oh, Flash Annual, written by the current writing team, let's get it. Whereas I didn't know Magenta was the villain, but as soon as he went to confront that woman, I'm like, oh no, that's Magenta. Oh no, why? Like, it was terrible. Like, I was on pins and needles reading this because I knew what was going to happen as a nice surprise.
And you know what I like, Joe? You know how you just said, from that run around 15 years ago?
Right.
That's when you were probably reading it.
Right.
Wally as the Flash, that run began almost 30 years ago.
Right. Well, no, 1986 it began.
I want to say it was a little later than that. I want to say it was 88, 89, because that it was the first. He became Flash in Crisis on Infinite Earths 12, but his Flash run started around the time Justice League 1 started, all those books, Suicide Squad, whatever, which was 88, 89. Hmm. So that's about 30 years ago. Take my word for it.
As the Flash historian of the show.
I should be in the Flash Museum giving tours.
That never ends up well for anyone.
No, it doesn't. That museum takes a pounding.
Now, according to the internet,
right?
It claims as though the first issue number 1, was cover dated July 1987.
All right, 87. That sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know, as a matter of fact, I think the other day, Jammed Maddies was tweeting out that it was the first issues of Justice League 1 came out 31 years ago, like,
right,
the other day.
I know for sure, I vividly have in my head that Justice League has a cover date of 1987. So that's why when you had said,
right,
it was right around that time.
But I know for a fact that Justice League has a cover date of 1987. But remember, there was the 3-month difference. So February 1988 is when it came out.
It says cover date in May of 87, so it would have been February of 87.
Oh, okay. Oh, well.
Again, I'm only going by what's on the cover of the printed book.
No, you're right. I have my math is wrong because I'm doing it backwards and off by one.
See, this is why That's you'll all. Never. While you may be a great curator of the Flash Museum, this is why you will never make as good as a Time Lord as I would.
Oh, I would be a great curator. You have no idea the wonderful joke you just made. You know, back in the day when I said one of the Four Horsemen would, I took a stab at Sid Vicious and you laughed your head off. The fact that you said I would make a great curator has me grinning from ear to ear and you have no idea why.
Is it something you explain here or no?
I could explain. It's in the 50th anniversary when the 11th Doctor's at the end and he's just sitting around. He's like, and they said, like, you know, the curator of the museum's looking for you. And he goes, you know what? I would like that job. I would like to be a curator of the museum. I would be a great curator. And when you hear that, he goes, you know what? You would be. And it was Scarf Doctor coming back to play a role. And he comes out, and as soon as you hear the voice, I lost my mind, Joe. And it was the 11th Doctor talking to the 4th Doctor, basically. And I was like, this is great, and the great curator, and you did so many wonderful things there that you don't know.
I'm glad that I was able to help you out, Todd.
Yay. And I know everybody who's a Doctor Who fan is like, that was fantastic.
Anything that I could do to facilitate your needless addiction to Doctor Who, then by all means, I will do it.
Good for you.
So, that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern Time or so, today was a rare early time. You will see the poll post, which is a link to all of the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books digitally, whether you get them in print, whether you get them in trade, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out. Now, the two things that Todd and I are attempting to do is, one, as we always do, is guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Currently at a dead heat of 3 correct guesses each. But we're also tallying how much we've spent on comics, you know, as the weeks are going on here to the end of the calendar year 2018. So in the last week of 2018, we could both cry together. Now, if you as a listener to the show are doing the same thing and you know how much you spend, feel free to follow along with us in the comments section every week as the poll post goes up. Now, I want to say that I did pull ahead this week, as I do have a couple extra books than Todd does, especially one very pricey book that I did not realize the price tag was that high on, but hoo boy. Todd, I'm going to let you go first as to guessing what I'm most looking forward to coming out this week.
Is it Swamp Thing, the Winter Special, number 1?
It is not.
Is it Rock Candy Mountain, number 8?
It is Rock Candy Mountain, number 8. That is the book I'm most looking forward to coming out this week. And I would guess that's the book that you're most looking forward to coming out as well, Rock Candy Mountain, number 8.
Yes, it is.
Right. So, hey, I'm in the lead. That's a plus one for me. Write that down.
Is the book that you were shocked by, the Swamp Thing Winter Special?
Oh, boy. That's a hefty $8 price tag on that.
It's a $7.99 price tag, Joe.
Oh boy. That's hey, listen, I'm sure it's worth it. I'm sure it's a really good story. It's Tom King doing a Swamp Thing story with, what is it, the last to-be-published work?
Of Len Wein.
So, yeah. I will be looking forward to it.
Yay.
Even with the hefty price tag. Now, while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure you can find all the other information, all the other stuff that Todd and I have ever done on the internet, whether it be past episodes of this show, past episodes of After Dark, past poll posts. Todd and Joe have issues. All of that sort of stuff is over at longboxheroes.com, as is the little store button where you could purchase a shirt or a sticker with our fancy our fancy logo on it from our good friend Tom Derenick, who has lots of projects in the pipeline, if you will. He's always a busy man. That's why it's tough to pin him down.
Yes, definitely tough to pin him down.
Yes. So, who knows? In the future, there might be even more things for you to purchase through there. You never know.
You never know.
If you don't want a shirt or you don't want a sticker, which you could purchase there currently, you could click on our Amazon click-through across the top of the page and purchase to your heart's content. Anything that you purchase through there, we get a little bit of a kickback. They call it an advertising fee. I call it something that puts a smile on Todd's face once a month.
That's right. My money bent to buy counterfeit art someday.
One day you'll be able to purchase all the fake art that you want, all the fake art to your heart's content.
That's right.
So some of the notable purchases this week were, I think this was the same person who purchased this, and that would be both DVD sets of Bret Hitman Hart The Dungeon Collection and Greatest Rivalries Shawn Michaels vs. Bret Hart.
Ah.
The same person, probably not the same person, brought the Bret Hart stuff, also purchased Japanese kanji for beginners, Japanese hiragana and katanaka for beginners, and Japanese for dummies books.
I understood every third word.
All right. Someone, I think, is maybe planning a trip to Japan.
Or they're bringing Japan to them.
Perhaps.
You never know.
And someone also purchased a book entitled, I Want It Now, A Memoir of Life on the Set of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I'm guessing written by, what was her name? Violet Beauregard, maybe?
I don't know. I'm hoping it's a minute-by-minute telling of the stories.
Well, I will say this. I'm almost certain that it was David of Podvocacy who had purchased that, so I do thank you very much for purchasing that, as it will go toward the research that you will be doing on your upcoming podcast that I'm very much looking forward to. Mm-hmm. So, Todd, we did have some Art Attack stuff this week as well. A busier Art Attack than usual, right?
Yeah. So, I think we had three.
Right. So, Dwayne, DC Mitzelpitalik on Twitter, tweeted us his most prized possession in his collection. He met Martin Nodell and his wife at a convention in 1994, and he got the Zero Hour number zero, a little sketch on there, and personalized to him. Mm-hmm. He said he's seen more elaborate ones online, but this one is his.
And that's what always makes it the best, is when it's yours.
Absolutely. Adam, a.k.a. the Fancy Gentleman, was showing off some of the original art he had purchased from the book Rogues, which I know is a book that you're a big fan of. Obviously, Fancy Gentleman Adam is as well, and I do like how he rubs it in your face that he purchased the things that you don't have, but I do think secretly you're antagonizing him to purchase those things anyway.
I am the enabler in his life, so.
But and
that's a nice piece.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's a nice piece. I'm a little jealous, but not much. Don't anybody tell the Fancy Gentleman.
He doesn't listen to this show.
Oh no, he doesn't.
And then, last but not least, mega power listener of the show, Euronymous, aka Chad, tweeted to us a signed copy of the book Little Guardians, with a sketch done by the artist of the book. I think Lee Cherilios, Cherolios, not to be confused with Chev Chelius from the Transporter films, but that's a fun
Crank
little
Crank movies.
Crank, same difference.
Listen, no, big difference.
Every Crank's one of those better. Movies is the same.
No, Crank is better.
Crank is better than the Transporter, but you can understand how I could get them confused.
Right. Now, wasn't the Transporter what we were hawking years ago?
No, that was the handy holder, which my son did not get with his tablet, sadly.
Oh, no, with the Transporter. Didn't we do that, too?
We did.
Okay. And I would also like to thank Euronymous, a.k.a. Chad, Mega Mass member, guy, dude, for the comics that were given to me through a you know, his mule, who will remain nameless.
Oh, that guy stinks.
He does, on ice.
So again, thanks everyone. If you have art that you have done yourself, something that you have purchased, something that you saw or had commissioned or what have you, let us know. Tweet at us with the handle Todd's art attack. It's important that you include Todd's art attack in there so we can find it, retweet it, and share your stuff with the rest of the world.
Yes, sirree, Bobber.
Yes, sirree, Bobber. So, again, not a huge question this week, but my friend James, actually, we were just kind of discussing people who are on the Avengers team.
Right.
And I think we might have done this way, way, way long time ago in one of our normal questions. I think this was like four question schemes ago.
Right.
Where we would do like a weekly themed thing.
Right.
But this one, I only thought of because my thought process on it and who I choose for this kind of goes against the grain of where I think most people might go or might lead or what have you.
Right.
Who is the worst Avenger?
D-Man, move on.
Now, see, I disagree. It's easy to lay claim to someone like your D-Mans, your Dr. Druids.
he was my next choice.
Your Cersei's, your people like that from the leather jacket wearing days of the Avengers, right?
Right.
For me, the worst Avenger, only because it completely goes against everything that the character is built around, is Spider-Man.
What?
Spider-Man, while being my favorite character, should never be an Avenger.
That's right. He should be a billionaire who's his own bodyguard.
Oh, come on now.
What?
Just because, listen, a great person once said, copy an A, get an A. Did he not?
Yes, well, Avengers are great. Make Spider-Man an Avenger. Copy an A, get an A.
No, so this was during a time where Brian Michael Bendis was on the Avengers, and more or less everyone was on the Avengers, from Storm to Wolverine to Daredevil to Spider-Man. And it was literally they were on for one mission, so now they get that Avengers designation. Because this was at the height of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the first Avengers movie just came out. So let's try to get as many people branded with an Avengers. Now that I think about it in the retrospect, there might have been ulterior motives to that, just to try to get those people to show up in movies.
What? Never.
But Spider-Man works best as a solo character, occasionally teaming up with similar street level and or misfit type characters not unlike himself.
Right, or defending his multi-million dollar factory in Japan. That's another street-level thing that he does a lot.
Listen, as long as he was on the streets when he was doing those things.
Sure he was. I remember when he was fighting the whatever, what was the gang that was based on all the constellations?
It was led by Zodiac, I remember that.
The Zodiacs, yeah, when he was fighting the Zodiac in his flying, multi-million dollar hovercraft with Mockingbird. That was really when I was enjoying Spider-Man. Yep, I remember that.
How dare you?
What? No, I'm just calling him as I see him.
Oh, you're the worst.
The best, my best, son.
All right, so, again, thanks, James, for sending that one in. I just wanted to get that out there. Spider-Man should never have been an Avenger.
Mm-hmm.
Don't care. Even if they made a hero click that he had the Avengers team symbol so you can make him thematic some other people, highly disagree with the decision made there.
You cannot argue with hero click logic. You know what? That should be the first question on the Hero Click podcast, is can you argue with hero click logic?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying.
Anyway, last but not least, let's do some TV talk.
All right.
Let's talk about The Flash. In this episode titled, Honey, I Shrunk Team Flash.
I wonder what happened in this episode.
Which is misleading because they only shrink two members of Team Flash, not the entire team.
That's close enough.
Now, I do want to mention this. obviously, and we'll get into the episode, of course, what happened, but I do, if you use IMDb regularly, a lot of times you'll see keywords that come up, things that happen in an episode of a TV show or happen in a movie that you can say like, oh, I want to do, all the episodes of this show where they talk about X, right? So you could do TV show, keyword, and it'll pull up any time that this was a thing that happened in a TV show. Then, of course, you know, there's podcast that I listen to where they're going to do, you know, top five characters having a nervous breakdown. So, you know, nervous breakdown is a keyword. You do a search, pull up that list of movies. There you go. The keywords for this episode, Todd.
Right.
Are Lego, couples therapy, IMAX, telepath, pregnancy, Chevy Chevelle, Bulbasaur, and DARPA. I don't know what DARPA is, Todd.
That was a TV show with Jenna Elfman, DARPA and Greg.
No.
Okay.
I think you're wrong there.
Right. Isn't DARPA like a government agency?
Yes, it's a government agency. There you go. Defense, advance, whatever, whatever, whatever.
Right. I like DARPA and Greg better, but anyway.
Terrible. So you got a lot going on in this episode. You got three concurrent storylines going on. What I would say is your A storyline is another villain person who has superpowers from the dark matter thing, has the power and ability to shrink and grow stuff. Now, is this actually Darkstar from the comic books? I don't think so, right? Or is Dwarf... Because I thought they said Darkstar, but they call him Dwarfstar, as I see
it. It is Dwarfstar, which is a character, but I'm not 100% sure if the name of the character is the same, but there is a Dwarfstar in comics.
Gotcha. So there's the villain, and then while that's going on, we learn that based on her pregnancy, Joe's girlfriend, wife, they're not married. They're not married yet. Together, right?
Yes.
Cecile is having the ability to read minds or hear other people's thoughts because of this. And again, of course, Barry is still trying to figure out why World Wrestling Entertainer and future Hall of Famer Goldberg is in prison. And he's getting conflicting information as to why, but Barry is still attempting to get Team Flash on the outside to help World Wrestling Entertainer and future Hall of Famer Goldberg out of prison. So I like the episode. It was fun. It was more lighthearted than anything. And I like the more lighthearted episodes of The Flash than the ones that are a little bit more dark. But at the end of the day, I had more problems, a.k.a. nitpicks with this. So go ahead. What did you think of this episode?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I'm the same way. I have a couple of problems with the episode. One of them is just the way Cecile just has no problem reading people's minds. Like, there's no any kind of like moral thing where she's like, maybe this is wrong, and just walks around like, hey, read your mind. I'll read your mind. And the other problem I have is that, is Big Sur just, you know, I can't wait till he comes back with brain damage in a suit of armor to fight the Flash. But
him out in this episode, right?
What?
They essentially write him out in this episode. You know, they essentially take him off the board. You know, part of what's going on with him and Barry is that him being in, again, him being Big Sur, I'm not going to keep hammering the Goldberg joke home too much.
You know, I love it. Go ahead.
I did it twice. That's enough. Three times we crossed the line. But he talked about being in prison so long, you kind of end up forgetting what hope is, and he tells Barry that his dream was to go to this small village in China with all these monks that take a vow of silence. And Barry, of course, thinking that he's going to outsmart Warden Wolf, uses his super speed to get Big Sur out of prison, drops him off there, but of course, Warden Wolf gets the drop on Barry, and that's going to lead us into what's going to happen to him getting out of prison, of course. Not in the way that we thought or hoped or otherwise.
Right.
So, of course, the stuff with Dwarfstar, and I want to mention, I knew Dwarfstar looked familiar, and again, this is one of those weird things, like, he would only look familiar to me. He played Jason in the most recent remake of the Friday the 13th movies. He's an actor by the name of Derek Mears, and he's actually a really funny guy. For a guy who's like a legit like 6'7", 6'8", whatever he is, and has a unique look, not unlike a Michael Barriman type.
Right.
Not the other John Barriman who does wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff as an archer on some other TV show.
Right.
But I think it's because of his unique look that he gets cast in roles like this, where he's actually a really funny guy, and I think he would have a future as like a comedic actor or a stand-up comedian. But anyway, I like the plot there. I like the special effects stuff that they did with the shrinking and growing stuff. His motivation was a little bit weird, right. But it led to some comedy with him shrinking Cisco and Ralph.
And I like the fact that he cycled off the juice so he could shrink down so the past picture of him would look different than the current look, you know, when he was all jacked up and he was a muscle guy and people thought he was Big Sur. Because he was the guy that murdered the person that Big Sur was in jail for.
Right? But he's not going to admit to it, even though they catch him and he kind of, you know, he tells them more or less, the Team Flash, that he did it. But he's right. Like, I'll never say it on the stand.
Right. So now, you know, that's why Flash ends up getting Big Sur out of jail. But, you know, I did like the bit, and I like the fact that that Wells is mad that he can't outthink the thinker because he's usually the smartest guy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads him to start making mistakes. And he ends up speeding up the demise of Cisco and Elongated Man and stuff like that. But in the whole thing of trying to outthink the thinker, I think that Cecile's telepathy is going to be a big part of that.
Uh-huh.
Is because it's going to be something that the thinker didn't see coming. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And he'll be like, oh, she can read his plan from him or something, and he won't know it. And they'll be like, hey, like, we can't outthink him, but I know his plan. Something like that. Something weird like that. That's where I think this is going.
Right, and again, of course, I don't want to hammer the same point home that you already did, because you did it so succinctly about if TV and movie and comic books have taught us nothing, when you suddenly get the ability to read minds, it's a learning process that you can't handle it and all this other stuff.
Right.
So, the other thing that I have to nitpick, and this is one of those only weird me things, and if you still have this episode on your TiVo, your DVR, however it is that you watch these sort of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a part where Goldberg and Barry are talking when Goldberg is sweeping up at the prison, right?
Right.
They're in a two shot. And in the two shot, they're kind of going back and forth. It's like, oh, here's the back of Goldberg's head while Barry's talking. Here's the back of Barry's head while Goldberg is talking, right? Mm-hmm. Goldberg's head looks so distressed and weird that it makes me think that it was a stand-in for those scenes. Even so much so that in the later scene where Barry brings him to China and he opens up the note, right?
Right.
It looks like especially his thumbs. His thumbs look like they were smashed with a hammer. And
only
it's not like
Joe.
Something out of the show. And it's
only
not like I have
Joe.
A deeply intimate knowledge of the back of Goldberg's head and thumbs. But they just looked odd and out of place to me. Like it was for those non-on-camera shots of him they used to stand in.
Oh, those DC shows, their wig work, their tiny hats, and their stand-in thumbs.
Again, Todd, these are the things.
Just stop it.
That stick in my head. I can't help the way my brain works, Todd. I wish I could.
That's the thumbest thing I've ever heard. No? Yes? What?
No.
I Why? Like the thumbest thing I've ever heard.
No. All right. It was a good episode. It was a fun episode. Little nitpicks notwithstanding. I still enjoy The Flash. It's still a show that I enjoy watching week in and week out.
Yep. You big thummy.
That I'll accept.
Okay.
That I'm a big thummy. So is there anything else that I forgot or neglected or otherwise?
The only thing I do want to ask you is I think next week starts Legends of Tomorrow?
Oh, let me ask the internet. Hang on.
But if it is, it's going to be on Mondays. So that throws us off. Like, because, well, no, because we'll talk about this week's Flash.
You are correct.
So just so you know.
I could probably fit it into my busy schedule to watch it before we record.
Right. That's what I was wondering, how we're going to do it. So I'm not rushing it to watch it if we're not going to review it on Tuesday. You know what I'm saying?
So starting next week, we'll be talking about the week's prior Flash and the days prior Legends of Tomorrow.
See, good thing I mentioned it.
Yeah, you're on the ball.
I'm on the ball sometimes. Hey, you know? Sometimes I get focused. I'm like a laser when certain things happen.
And then next weekend is when Black Panther comes out.
That's right. That could have been a Valentine's Day movie, but it's one day later.
Right.
So take your loved ones to see Black Panther.
I will more than likely be going to see that for certain that Sunday. Sunday is usually the best time for me to get a chance to see your movies.
Right. I actually have my ticket a week now for Black Panther.
Oh, boy.
Somebody bought them, and they're like, here you go. And I gave them my money, and we're good.
Oh, must be nice.
It is. All right, then.
All right, everyone. So, again, thank you very much for listening. This has been episode 384 of Long Box Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe, and we'll see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boo!